A morning today's Daf and Shabbos Kuf Hey. We are on the very bottom of Kuf Dalamad Beis, four lines from the bottom. We are starting this morning with the words Tana. We are in the discussion of the Malacha of Kosev. Here at the end of the 12th parak of the Masechta, the Gemara has taken us through a couple of Malachas in this parak. This is a short parak. Parak begins on the top of Kuf Beis Amad Aleph. We started this parak with the Malachas of Binyan Makabeh Patish. We moved on to the malacha of choresh and any kind of ground improvement. We then moved on to the malacha of kosev. In terms of the order of the malachas that we're following of the 39 malachos, so it seems haphazard. I assume Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had a plan in terms of why jumping from one malacha to the malacha in the order that we are following, although I cannot formulate exactly what the plan is. But anyway, we're in the malacha of kosev. And here, at the end of the 12th parak of the Masechta, so the Perek deals with the Malacha of Kosev in some detail. Already a number of Mashanas that were covered regarding the Malacha of Kosev. And we're coming off a Mishnah on yesterday's daf on Kuf Dalamad Aleph. They gave us the very details regarding Kosev in terms of writing down two letters. The Malacha, by definition, requires that one has to write two letters in order to violate this Malacha. So the Gemara gave a couple of analyses in terms of when one would be chai for writing those two letters. They have to be proximate to one another. Although the Gemara just concluded yesterday, and this is what we got to at yesterday's Gemara, is that if I write a letter in one location and then write a letter in another location, and the only thing that needs to happen is they just need to be brought next to one another, that also violates the malacha of kosev. Tano now picking it up right where we left off yesterday. Higia osachas chayv. So we are four lines from the bottom of the amud on Kuf Dalamud Beis, and the brisa begins. And that is if I were to edit one letter, so one's going to be chayv. So the Gemara says editing a letter is going to be chayv. The Gemara says that brisa seems not to make any sense. Hasha kasav osachas pater higia osachas chayv. I don't understand, says the Gemara. If you are writing a letter, you're not going to be chayv as of yet because the malacha requires that you write two letters. So certainly if all you're doing is just editing one letter, there's no way you're going to be chayv. So Rav Sheshet says, yeah, the example over here is where, let's say, you had the roof of the ches. Now, ches is as a constructed letter, has got a roof over the top, and it's got two legs coming down. And let's say one were to remove the roof of the ches. Now, it doesn't mean remove the roof of the ches, but rather what it means is to split it up. And now by splitting up the roof of the ches, what you're now doing is you're creating two letters, two characters of Zion, side by side. So that would be a way in which one would be editing a single letter. And by doing so, and by editing, we simply mean breaking up that letter and now constructing it into two Zions. Just as a point of interest, so a Ksiva Sefer Torah is written nowadays in one of two formats. One is Ksav Beis Yosef, and the other one is Ksav Ari. There are two different, mild differences between the way they're written. Minag Ashkenaz, Minag Sfard is to work with a Ksav Beis Yosef. That is the lettering as outlined by the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Cairo. And then the Hasidim work with the Ksav of the Ksav Ari. One of the notable differences between them is the letter Ches. The letter Ches, so according to the Ksav Beis Yosef, is that it is two Zion side by side, and the top of the two are connected on the roof, as opposed to the Ksav Ari, where it's a Zion right next to a Vav, and then the two are connected on the top. If you look at our Gemara seems to be a very strong support and proof for the Ksav Beis Yosef, because our Gemara just told us that if I took the letter Ches and I were to then just simply separate the two at the top, that what would happen then is that it would be two Zions. It's a pretty clear proof that our Gemara here is favoring the Ksav Beis Yosef as opposed to the Ksav Ari. I'm sure the Ksav Ari can be defended, but nevertheless, just as an interesting point of aside. We are in the bottom of the Amud. Rava now is giving a different answer to the question. Again, the Brisa says, Higia Osacha, that if we just edited a single letter, you're going to be chayev, and that was very difficult to understand. So Rav Sheshet already gave one answer. The Gemara now is going to give a second answer. Rava Amar Kigon Shanat Lo, Letagu Shadalas Vaasu Reish. So Rava is of the opinion that here's what you did, that you took the Dalad, Now that little end on the roof that is extending to the right side of the leg, so you knock that off and you turn it into a resh. And that is how you're going to be chayiv. Now this, of course, needs more explanation, because all you did was you took a dal and you turned it into a resh, but that's all constructing one letter, and the malach of kosev requires that you write two letters. So what does that mean? So Rashi on the bottom of the amud now fills in the gaps over here. Let's see the Rashi together. Rav Amar Kigon Shenat Letaga Dedalad Delohave Ela Hagas Os Achas. You're editing one letter. Uvedavar Muat Chayev. And of course, you're just doing the smallest amount. All you're doing is removing the small little extension that goes off the side of the leg. And Chayev, you're going to be Chayev. Hovezeu Tikun HaSefer. Now Rashi adds an important detail over here, which is not in the Gemara, but you have to say this. Otherwise, there's no way you can conclude that the person is going to be chayv on the malach of Shabbos. The also la adam lasho sefer she'ino muga. So first of all, the sefer was incorrect, meaning to say that we're describing a scenario in which this is the only error that's found in the sefer Torah, and by writing this one letter, correcting this one letter, I should say. So now you are correcting the entire sefer Torah. She'ino muga mishum al tishkan ba'olecha avla. Pasuk in Iyov says that you're not allowed to have any kind of impropriety in your house. And v'havalei kiksav os achas v'hishlim l'sefer. So now that this sefer is now corrected, meaning prior to this it was considered an avla to have a sefer with even one mistake in it. It's a pasul sefer Torah. And now that with that one correction, you now have transformed it into a kosher sefer Torah. Rashi says, what is this? This is now being mashlim. And we learned this in yesterday's daf. That when a person is being mashlim a sefer Torah, when he's completing a sefer Torah, so even though he's writing one letter, so he's going to be chayiv. Now, as we discussed yesterday, the chayiv can come as a result of him being makeh bepatish, because this is the final letter that now completes the sefer, or it could be a special halacha within ksiva, meaning that normally speaking you have to write two letters, but if the one letter that you're writing is now going to complete it, so then even as far as ksiva is concerned, you could be chayiv in the malach of ksiva. The Gemara does not make that point abundantly clear. Two possibilities. Anyway, let's go back to the Gemara. Let's continue. Tana, we learned in a brayse, in his kavan lechtov os achas v'alav yadu shtayim chayiv. Let's say your intention was to write one letter, and by accident you wrote two letters, you're going to be chayiv. So the Gemara says, now that is difficult to understand. First of all, what's the case in which you're writing one letter and you end up writing two letters? So Rashi says it goes back to what we just said a moment ago, which is that you were planning on writing the ches, and then what you didn't do is that you didn't complete the roof on the top of the ches, and so now basically what you did is you wrote two zayins. So you wrote two zayins, you're going to be chayiv. Fine. V'hatanan pater. Now the Gemara says, now in the Mishnah we learned that you're pater. So the Gemara says, lokasha had the bai ziyuna had the labai ziyuna. So the Gemara says the distinction can be whether or not you wrote ziyune or you did not write ziyune. What are ziyune? Again, let's go back to Rashi. Rashi explains. Hadabai is ziyune. The case in which you're putter is where the zayin is an incomplete zayin because you did not add the ziyune. Rashi explains. Shadayin trichos rashi hazayanim lizaynam bitagin. So as far as the letter zayin is concerned, so they needed it to be completed with crowns. Shalahem shazayan srichim gimel ziyunin, yamin usmol ulamala. Rashi writes that when it comes to the Zion, so it needs to be crowned with three crowns on the letter Zion. There needs to be a crown on the right side of the roof, on the left side of the roof, on the center of the roof. So without that, it certainly sounds like from Rashi, a simple reading of Rashi, is that it's not yet a completed letter as far as Ksiva Sefer Torah. And so that means to say that the Mishnah that says that you're going to be Chayiv, it means that the Zion's already completed with the crowns. The mission that says that you're going to be Pater is talking about where you did write two Zion's, but you wrote them incomplete without the Tagin, without the crowns, and that's why you're going to be Pater. And now we're on to the last part of the Mishnah, and that is you write one letter, but that one letter is serving as a contraction of an entire word. So under those circumstances, are you going to be Chayiv or not? It's a Machlokes HaTanayim. Rav Yeshua ben Beser is of the opinion you're going to be chayiv. The Chachamim say you're pater, even though it's understood that that one letter is really a contraction of a full word, but the malacha of kosev is to write two letters. Am Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Yosef ben Zimra Minayin Lalashon Nochikim Natara. Now this idea that we have contractions, where do we see that in the Torah? And the Gemara is now going to be giving numerous examples. In fact, from here until the next Mishnah, all we're going to do is just cite examples where we find notrikin in the Torah. Words which are not really words, but are just really compositions, contractions of multiple words. So Shinamar, so here's example number one, ki av hamon goyim nesaticha. Kadosh Baruch Hu's promise to Avram Avinu is that you're going to be av hamon, and now the Gemara is going to understand that the word av and the word hamon are really contractions. Av nesaticha l'umo, so the aleph, is that you are going to be the patriarch for the nations, and bechor nesaticha l'umo, and you're going to be the chosen one amongst the nations. And next, we're going to go over the word hamon. Hamon now is a contraction of four words. The first is going to be chaviv. Now, the hey and the ches, we see time and again, are interchangeable. Especially if you listen to the way a Sephardi pronounces the ches, it sounds much more similar to the letter hey. Again, the Ashkenazic pronunciation, more of a variation between the two, but still, the idea that the hey and ches are transferable, are somewhat related, is an idea that expresses itself time and again throughout Shas. So, Chaviv Nesatich Be'almos, your beloved. The Mem is Melch Nesatich Be'almos, you are going to be royalty. Vatik Nesatich Be'almos, you're going to be a scholar. And Ne'eman Nesatich Be'almos, and you're going to be trusted. Rav Yochanan Didei Amar. Now, Rav Yochanan first quoted the opinion of Rav Yossi ben Zimra. Now, Rav Yochanan is citing his own example of a contraction. Amar Anochi. We go to the beginning of the Aseres HaDibros, and the word Anochi is a contraction, no trikon. And it stands for, and we're going over, Aleph Nun, Chaf Yud. Ananavshi Ksivas Yabes. So I myself wrote it and I gave it, meaning as a reference to the Aseres HaDibros, as a reference to the Torah in total. Rabbanan Amri, now the Chachamim, are also going to assume that the Anochi is a contraction, and they learn it a little bit different. Amir and Ima Ksiva Yavis. Amir and Ima, it was a pleasant stating, Ksiva Yavit, and then I wrote it down and then I gave it. Igadarmi now in a slightly modified version, Anochi Limafreya. So Anochi is a contraction, but here what we're going to do is that we're going to assume that the letters are to be read in the opposite order. And that is Yavik Siva Ne'emanim Amare, that I gave over the writings that are of trustworthiness, which I said over. Okay, so I'm sure that the subtle differences that lie between the three different ways that we articulate and express the contraction of the word Anochi, I'm sure there are differences between them. We're going to go on in the Gemara. Debei Rabbi Nasan Amri ki arat haderech le-negdi. And the description over there in Parshas Balak, where Bilam is riding his donkey, and the donkey turned to the side, and we have the word yarat, and the Gemara is assuming that the word yarat is a contraction, and that is yirah ra'asa natasa. He was afraid because he saw, and he turned to the side. The donkey seeing the malach, so he had fear. He saw the donkey. Seems to be those two are out of order. First you see, then you're afraid. But regardless, and natasa, and now the donkey moved to the side. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, another example of the word Carmel. When describing the grains that are going to be offered for the Karban Omer, the Torah says that it has to be Carmel, and the description of Carmel, the word Carmel, is actually a description of the grain Carmalay. Car from coming from the word pillow, which is like means to say that it's soft, and Malay means that it has to be plump. And Rashi over here writes, Gabi Minchas Omer Ksiv, Geras Carmel, Shemivia Kishihi Lacha, Ba'osha Zer Nafuach. You have to bring while the grain is still moist, and the kernel itself is bloated. Va'akarsho Kashma Lehemenu. Back to the Gemara. This is already now the fifth example of contraction. Rav Acha by Yaakov Amra Vuhu Kalani Klala Nimretzes. This is David HaMelech in the beginning of Sefer Malachim speaking to his son Shlomo and explaining to him what needs to be done with various friends and enemies of David that he collected over his lifetime. And this is in a relationship to Shimon ben Gera cursed David HaMelech, and now David HaMelech explains to his son that he cursed me with a klala nimretzes. And the word nimretzes, the Gemara now assumes, is a contraction, no trikon, and that is no efu. And these are the accusations that he threw at me. He described me as being an adulterer, Moavi, who he described me as being a Moabite. Adultery, of course, going to the episode of Uriah. and being a Moabite, being a descendant of Rus. Rotseachu, he's a murderer. Sarerhu, he's an enemy. Toevahu, he's disgusting. And so these are the curses that he cursed at me. And he explains to Shlomo HaMelech, now you'll know how to handle Shimi ben Gera. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Man Daber Manitz Tadak. So the brothers, upon realizing that that all the calamities that fell upon them was as a result of how they treated Yosef, so they said Man Daber Manitz Tadak. And Gemara now understands that the word Nitzadak is actually a contraction of the following, which is Nechonim Anachnu, we are correct, Tzadikim Anachnu, we're Tzadikim, Tahar Anachnu, we're pure, and Dakim Anachnu, we're pure, Kedoshim Anachnu, we are holy. And even though they are, this one's a little bit tough, because even though they are admitting their fault, and even though they realize what they did was wrong, at the same time, they're also, it's insinuated within the contraction, that they also realize that their intention was the best of intention, and they were not, and they did not have any ill intent in terms of the way they handled Yosef. And if you wanted a little bit more on this topic, there's a famous forno in along the storyline in Bereishis in Perek Lamed Zayin. This forno goes on to explain a couple of times in the Perek. Excuse me, I don't have the exact pasuk at hand right now. But this forno goes on to explain that the brothers actually thought that Yosef was a rodef. He thought that Yosef was actually out to get them. The dreams were all his thoughts of how he was going to take over the brothers, assume total control, and they viewed him as being a rodef, and so they acted in more of an act of self-defense. Anyway, and our Gemara certainly seems to support that suggestion. We're up to the last Mishnah. Last Mishnah of the Perek, as we are finishing up the 12th Perek of Masechta Shabbos. The Mishnah begins. Akoze beizosios b'shtei alamos achas achas v'achas ben arbayim. Rabbi Gamliel mechayv v'chachamim pochim. So let's say you write two letters and you do so in shtei halamos. You do so the first letter you forgot it was Shabbos. You wrote your first letter and then you remembered it was Shabbos. And then what happened is that you forgot again it was Shabbos and you wrote your second letter and then you remembered it was Shabbos. So you had two separate yedios as you wrote your two letters. Now the Mishnah gets a little bit funny because the Mishnah then says that you wrote one letter in the morning and one letter in the afternoon. Now we're going to come back to that in just a moment, but first let's just explain the basic premise of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Gamliel mechayv chacham and poshim. Rabbi Gamliel says that you're going to be chayv, meaning that this is going to be a violation of the malach of kosev, even though it was done in shtei halamos. And the chachamim say you're going to be patur, and the chachamim say you're going to be exempt from bringing a karban, because in order to bring a karban, the malacha has to be done in one halama. Now the Gemara says, now what's the difference over here between the position of Rabbi Gamliel and the chachamim? And b'maikam mezugi, Rabbi Gamliel savra ein yediyah lachatzi shir. Rabbi Gamliel says that, look, when you had your yediyah, your state of awareness, that did not break up the two acts, because the only time the yediyah is going to break up an act is only when you did a complete act. You didn't do a complete act. You only wrote one letter. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Gamliel, a yediyah is not going to be mechalek chatzi shir, a half of a shir. And the only time the yediyah becomes significant is only after the completion of a full act. And Rabban Savri yesh yediyah chatzi shir. And the Chachamim argue on this very point. The Chachamim say that no, there was a yediyah between the writing of the first letter and the writing of the second letter. That yediyah is halachically significant. It is going to break up the two actions. And therefore, we do not have the violation of Shabbos done in its entirety in one state of halama. That is the machlokus between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim. First and foremost, what is the source of Rabbi Gamliel? The Gemara does not discuss this any further in terms of giving sourcing, in terms of giving svara, what is behind the shita of Rabbi Gamliel. Tosus over here cites, second to last Tosus of the Perek, second Tosus on the Amud, Rabbi Gamliel savrein yedil achatzi shir, near the Tam de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, mishum dichsiv, o hoda ilav chataso. When going through the psukim in the parsha of a carbon chatas, the Torah says, hoda ilav chataso. He became aware of his chait. And that means that the Torah here is describing a yediyah, and the significance of a yediyah is when you become aware of an entire chait. Yidiyas chatas hu dishma yidiya, ava yidiya de lav chatas lav shma yidiya. The only time the yidiya becomes significant is if the yidiya results in the bringing of a carbon chatas. But because in this case you only wrote one letter, and even if you were to find out, you would not be bringing carbon chatas. So that speaks to now the deficiency in the yidiya. That's Tosus' understanding of what is the basis of Shitas Rami Gamliel. Okay, good. So Ad Kan, so that takes us to the end of the parak. Let's just go back to the Mishnah, and let's see if we can wrap our head around the idea that the Mishnah also adds the detail where you wrote one letter in the morning, one letter in the afternoon. Well, that really is unnecessary, because that's not the critical point over here. The critical point is that you wrote a letter in a state of halama, then you had an awareness, a yediyah, and then you wrote a second letter. That's really the main point of the Mishnah. The fact that you wrote one in the morning, one in the afternoon, seems to be irrelevant to our discussion. And Rashi over here writes in explanation, So Rashi over here says that, look, if you wrote one letter in the morning and one letter in the afternoon, so the chances are, the likelihood is that in between you learned that it was Shabbos. This Rashi over here is similar. I know it takes us back some time. But if you go back to the beginning of the seventh parak, and you remember the Rashi in the beginning of the seventh parak, so Rashi employed a similar svara in terms of a person who violates multiple Shabbosos. Where Rashi over there says that there's no way you're going to go an entire week from one Shabbos to another not having heard or learned that the previous Shabbos was in fact Shabbos. Meaning you mistakenly thought the previous Shabbos was not Shabbos. You violated that Shabbos, but only with the halama of, or I should say the shogeg, that you didn't know was Shabbos. And then you did the same thing for the second Shabbos, and you did the same thing for the third Shabbos. You're going to be a chayv, a carbon chatzis for every Shabbos. That was the beginning of the seventh parak. And Rashi over there employed a similar svara, which is that between Shabbos to a Shabbos, so there's no way you're not going to hear that the previous week, that day that you thought was Sunday, was actually Shabbos. So similarly over here, it's not the same, but similarly over here, if you wrote a letter in the morning and you wrote a letter in the afternoon, so between the two, you must have heard that today was Shabbos, and then you just forgot again. Okay, that's Rashi. You can see the last Tosfos where he quotes Rashi. He really is opposed to Rashi's pshat over here. Tosfos gives a different pshat. See Tosfos. I'm not going to go through it right now. But anyway, but it is certainly a curiosity why the Mishnah adds one letter in the morning, one letter in the afternoon. Hadron Lachabona, that is the end of the 12th parak of the Masechta. And let us now begin this morning the 13th parak of Masechta Shabbos. Now we can formally say it. We are at the halfway point of Masechta Shabbos. This is now the midway of Parakim. There are in Shabbos a total of 24 parakim, and we've just completed 12, which means 12 down, 12 more to go. In terms of dapim, it's a world of difference. In terms of actually how many number of pages are left, well, there are a total of 157 blot of Masecha Shabbos, so, and we've concluded over 100. So in terms of pages, we are only one-third left of the Masechta. Two-thirds done, a third left. Which obviously means now, if you put those two pieces of information together, that the prakim that we're going to be covering are going to be significantly smaller. Meaning that the prakim that we covered in the beginning of the Masechta were larger prakim in terms of actual Gemara. Now coming up, let's say about the same number of Mishnayos, but the Gemara is going to be significantly less. Okay, stats of the day. Let's start the 13th parak. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Harik Shlosha Chutim B'tchila V'achas Al Harik Chayev. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion now that in terms of the malacha of weaving. Now, in order to really appreciate and understand the malacha of weaving, you have to know the process of how weaving is done. And I am not going to go through right now the exact process of weaving. There are now, thank God, many different sources. I'm sure Art School does a phenomenal job. Many different sources in terms of where you can find gain an appreciation and understanding of the weaving process and how it is done. It is, quite frankly, necessary to know it. I don't know it well. Let's make that admission right now. And by the way, just to make it even more difficult in terms of learning the Gemara, the modern weaving process was not exactly the same one the way it was done in the time than it was in the time of the Gemara. In the Gemara, it was a somewhat more primitive version of how weaving was done than in the modern, in the modern. I say modern, by the way, I'm not talking about 20th to 21st century. I'm even going back to the Middle Ages, where there they had some sort of machinery. I don't mean that it was motor driven, but there was some sort of machinery in terms of how to facilitate the weaving process. The concepts and the ideas are essentially the same, but as you go back to the time of the Gemara, it was just simply a more primitive version. So as the Gemara is giving a description of the weaving process, I'll speak for myself. I can understand it just from a basic conceptual standpoint, but the specifics of what they are describing, so admittedly, I'm going to fall short in terms of giving a good description. Even as I study the modern weaving practice, it still doesn't really match what they used in the time of the Gemara. But in terms of concepts, I understand. Okay, and in terms of concepts, like this we can go over, and this we can go over quickly. The weaving is very simple, and that is that there's going to be a horizontal, there's going to be a vertical. You set up the vertical is called the chassis. Warp, I think, is what they describe it in English. You set up the vertical, and what you're going to be doing now is that you're going to be setting it up so that the even strings and the odd strings are connected to two different apparatus, or apparati, if that's even better English. And then what happens is that you have the odd number strings that are connected to one apparatus, and you have the even number strings connected to another apparatus. And what happens now is that you just simply lift one and you lower the other. And now what you do is you send a shuttle right through the two of them, and now that is one line of weaving. Then you do is you take the same shuttle and you throw it back, and that obviously is going to represent the horizontal strings. And that's going to be your second line of weaving. And then you set it in again, and that's going to be your third line of weaving. Good. That's the general idea of weaving. It's really straightforward in terms of a concept, in terms of the machinery that's being used. So again, I'm going to fall short in terms of describing the machinery. But anyway, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, now with all that stated, let's go back to the Mishnah. I should have started off with that. But okay. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ha'arik Shosha Chutim B'tchila V'achas Ha'arik Chayef. So Rabbi Eliezer says that in terms of the number of horizontals that need to go across, be shuttled across, so Rabbi Eliezer says the number is 3, meaning it is not going to be a significant fabric. It's not going to be considered a malacha until you have 3 horizontals going through. Now, if you already have a woven fabric, so there Rabbi Eliezer says all you need to do is just add one more horizontal string in order for that to be significant. So the shita of Rabbi Eliezer has 2 components to it. One is that when you start off, it has to be 3. 2 is that if you already have a garment of woven fabric and I'm adding 1, you only need to add 1. Now the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Eliezer on both points. One is that when you're beginning a woven fabric, you only need to have 2 going across. And the second point they also disagree with, which is that even if I already have a woven fabric, I'm adding weave, you must be adding 2 horizontal rows, not 1 horizontal row. If you set up, now we're talking about setting up the machinery itself, and so that what you're doing is that you're creating the loops, which you're going to be sending the chassis, you're going to be sending the vertical through these loops. And if you set up 2 bate nirim binirin, so this is the machinery that the Mishnah over here is describing. And again, in terms of the description of the machinery, we get this one line of Mishnah, we're going to get one line of Gemara describing it in some more detail. And again, here's where I'm going to fall short, but the basic idea is that when you set up the machinery, so now you have the vertical set up, 2 of them, shtei batei nirin, and then the Mishnah then adds the words benirin, and the Gemara itself is going to ask the question, well, what does that mean? And bikirus, some other type of machinery that was used for the weaving process, napa, bekavra, vesal, or let's say you're weaving the basket, chayev, just setting it up, setting 2 of them up is going to be chayev. Va'atofer beis tfiros va'koreh amanasut for beis tfiros. And then the Mishnah talks about stitching. Stitching 2 stitches or tearing so that you could stitch 2 stitches. So in the malacha of stitching, the shear is going to be 2. And this is not open for a debate. This is agreed to by everybody. We start with the Gemara. Ki asa Rav Yitzchak tini shtayim. Now in Rav Yitzchak's braisa, or in his versions of the Mishnah, the number is 2. And Va'anan Tanan Gimel. Now the problem is that we have the Mishnah saying Gimel. Now we are in the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah. But even within the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, there are 2 versions of what he says in terms of starting us off. How much do you need to start us off? So our Mishnah says three, but Rav Yitzchak has a version where it says two, and the Gemara says actually both versions are correct. Now, how could both versions be correct? It's either going to be two or it's going to be three. So Lokasha Habalim Habakatina. The Gemara says, well, it depends on whether or not you're weaving very thin thread or you're weaving very thick thread. Now, when is it going to be two? When is it going to be three? Actually, the Gemara says, I can argue either way. Amrila lahagisa, v'amrila lahagisa. Amrila lahagisa, alima tlasa, lo sasre, tre sasre. So when I'm dealing with thick thread, it has to be three. Because it's so thick, that if all I did was just two, so then it's going to be easily undone, right? Imagine tying. If you're tying something that's very thin thread, so you can make you don't need a lot of string in order to tie a knot. It's not a perfect analogy, but over here, if I am weaving and the threads are really thick, it's only going to hold together if I'm doing three. On the other hand, ketini trei nami lo sasre. But if I have very thin thread, so then the weaving of two already is going to sit well and not become undone, and therefore you're going to be chai. So that's one way to explain it. Actually, we can explain it in the opposite direction. Or the Gemara says maybe it's an issue of perception, in that when I have very thin thread and all I did was weave two, it's really hard to see. Meaning it's hard to see the weave pattern, it's hard to see that you have a woven fabric in front of you, and so therefore you need three. On the other hand, if the thread is really thick and I have two, well, already you could see that it's a woven pattern, and therefore you're going to be chayv. So the Gemara says that two and three are both legitimate ways to read Rebbe Elazar's position, and it could just simply be discrepancy of the thickness of the thread, but how that affects the number two or three could be argued in either direction. Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Arig Gemachutim Betchil Vechad Al Arig Chayev. So the Braisa over here is similar to our Mishnah, but here in the Braisa, the first opinion is anonymous. In just a moment, we're going to identify as Rabbi Eliezer, which is kind of obvious, but the Gemara is going to go through the process anyway. So here in the Braisa, if I start off with three threads, again, the three horizontals going across, or Echad Al Ha'arig, or let's say I already have a woven fabric and I just add one, you're going to be Chayev. If a Chachamim or Min Bein Betchil Bein Mistof Shirin Beis Chutin. So the Chachamim say no, that the weave has to only be two horizontal rows, and here in the Braisa, just a little more detail is being added. Now when you're doing the edge, so it's going to be Beis Chutin, it's going to be two, and the width is going to be Gimel Batei Nirin. In other words, how long a weave does it have to be? Meaning, really, we've been focusing only on the number of horizontal strings that have to go across. Two, one, two, or maybe three. But in terms of the length of the horizontal, so it really wasn't articulated in our Mishnah, here in the Braisa, Gimel Batei Nirin. Which means to say that you're going to be going from loop, from vertical loop, to vertical loop, to vertical loop, and you're doing that three times. That's going to be the length of the weave. Halamaz Adamala Arik Siltzu Katan. Now, the reason why that's significant is because when making the smallest belt, so it's going to go across three. Beis Chutin Baruch of Gimel Batei Nirin. It's going to be two strings going across three of these loops. Va'ari Gimel Chutin Betchil Ve'echad Al-Ari Chayev. And then when you do three strings in the beginning and one at the or one already on a woven, you're going to be Chayev. The Gemara is going over the first point of the Braisa, Stomach Rebbe Lazar, and the Gemara says that even though in this Braisa it was presented as an anonymous position, but we know because of our Mishnah that that is the Shita of Rebbe Eliezer. Good. Tanya Idach, the Gemara is going to be quoting another Braisa, and we're going to be doing the same thing here, just in the reverse. Hari Beis Chutim Al Hagaz V'Ala Imra Chayiv. The Tanakama says that if I'm weaving two horizontal strings, and whether it's thick, whether it's Imra, a type of fabric, so you're going to be chayv. Meaning, according to the Tanna Kamma, the number is two. Rebbe Lazar Amar Afilu Echad. And Rebbe Lazar says it could be even one. Uvisafa. Now, if you're doing it on the edge, Shnei Chutim Baruch Shlosha Batei Nirin. It's going to be two strings that are going to go across three loops across. Chayv, then you're going to be chayv. Again, the significance is going to be it's a small bell. Shnei Chutim Aruch of Gimel Batei Nirin. It's going to be two strings that are going to go across three batinirin. Al Hagaz Al Imra Chayev. Now the Gemara just goes over that first position of that Braisa, Stomach Rabbanan. Meaning in this Braisa, the anonymous first position's authorship is the Chachamim. Continuing. Hausei beis bate nirin, my bin nirin. The Gemara wants to try to understand a little bit better the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, if we look at the fourth line of the Mishnah, Hausei shtei bate nirin, ba nirin. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi tarte de bate nira v'chad de benira. So what you're doing is that you're looping two, and also you're continuing that loop to the nira. Now here is where the Gemara is trying to give some description of the mechanism that was used back then in terms of how exactly you're looping the vertical strings so that it goes not only through the loops, but it also hits the actual machinery itself. It goes to the end of the machinery, the anchoring of the machinery. Exactly how it's being described over here, not totally sure, but that's the basic idea. Bikiris my Bikiris Amarav Mitsubisa. The Kiris being described in our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, what is that? So the Gemara gives a term in Aramaic that helps the Chachmei Bavel understand what that is better. And Rashi also gives a description of what we're describing over here, but basically some sort of frames that are used in terms of holding together the vertical strings. Hatofer Beis Tfiros, now we're up to the stitching. Hatenina Ba'abos Malachas Hatofer Beis Tfiros. The Gemara says, good. Our Mishnah, understandably, now is going through the processes of weaving and stitching. Weaving, we just explained. Stitching, our Mishnah does not give us a lot of information regarding stitching. In fact, what does our Mishnah teach us that we didn't learn back on the Mishnah Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph? And the Gemara is basically going to say nothing. Meaning, after learning the Mishnah Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, so that's the same exact information that we learned in our Mishnah over here. And that's what bothers the Gemara. And the Gemara is going to ask a series of questions. Let's see where it takes us. Hatofer Beis Tfiros HaTanin Ba'avos Malachos. We learned it back in the seventh parak. Hatofer Beis Tfiros Mishum Dekabar Limus Seifa. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. But it's really setting us up for the next part of the Mishnah, which is HaKorei Amanas Litzvor Beis Tfiros. So the next part of the Mishnah is really the significant part, which is, that's the Chiddush, which is if I tear an amount worth where I can then stitch it up two stitches. Ketani Nami, Atofer Vakorea. So the Gemara says, okay, go back to the seventh parak, reread the seventh parak. The Mishnah there says it. Again, nothing new in our Mishnah. Hanami Tanina Babas Malachos. Ela Mishum de Kabaila Mishnah Seifa, Korea Bechamaso, the Ameso. So Mishum Hachia Ketani Atofer Shtei Tfiros. So the Gemara says, you are absolutely right. In our Mishnah that we just got done saying, there is nothing new. What our Mishnah is doing is setting us up to the next Mishnah. And you have this a number of times throughout Shas, that sometimes the Mishnah is just simply a setup for another point. So you're right. In our Mishnah, nothing new to be said regarding stitching. We learned it back in the seventh parak. It sets us up for the next Mishnah, which we're going to see in just a moment. So I will explain it as we get to the upcoming Mishnah. Ketani Hatofer Shtei Tfiros. HaKorea Manasut for Shtei Tfiros. Hech Mishkachala. Now this idea that you're tearing so that you can restitch. Why are you tearing just so that you can restitch? If it's already stitched, so what would be the purpose of tearing only to restitch it? The Gemara asks that very question. So the Gemara says, "De'avda ki kisisa." So the Gemara says, well, it could very well be that the original stitching that was done was very lumpy. It wasn't a good job. Qualitatively, it wasn't good. So what you're going to do is you're going to tear the area in order to restitch it. Okay, perfect. And so what the Mishnah, what the Gemara's explanation over here, Gemara is very succinct, what the Gemara's explanation is that you want to take a shoddy job of stitching, and you want to make it qualitatively better. So what you're going to do is you're going to tear at the area in order so that you can restitch it and do it in a better quality. We're up to the Mishnah now on Kufhei Amud Beis. Here we go. HaKorea B'chamaso V'al Meso. A person tears out of anger, or Rachmanus, a person lost a karov, he lost a relative, and so therefore he's tearing kriya because there is a mitzvah to tear kriya for a karov. Now, the first one, we're going to be discussing in much greater detail because, well, we're going to discuss both in great detail, sorry. But the first one is where, seemingly, what you're doing is just simply a destructive act, meaning it's pure destruction. And the Mishnah is about to inform us that because it's a destructive act, so therefore it's going to be potter. Interestingly, the Mishnah also puts together with that when a person does kriya because he has lost a relative. And the Gemara and the Mishnah is about to call that also a destructive act. And we're going to deal with the basic question of, if you're tearing kriya because there's a mitzvah to tear kriya, you really can't call that a destructive act. If you're following the mitzvah satorah, so then that is constructive, not destructive. So we're going to get to that because that obviously becomes a major issue that we need to explore in our Mishnah. The Gemara is going to discuss that. So, Hakorei b'chamas v'alme, so if a person does kriya either because he's angry or because he is tearing kriya over the loss of a relative, v'chola mekalkalim puturim. And any time that you're doing anything destructive on Shabbos, so one is going to be puter. V'amekalkal amanat l'sakin shira k'misakin. However, if the purpose of kilkul is because you want to fix, like the example of stitching that we just gave in the previous Mishnah, so then the shear is going to be kemisakin. And the truth of the matter is that we are just learning a general rule that we already saw the application in the previous Mishnah. Meaning, tearing in of itself is destructive. But if I'm tearing so that I could restitch it, so then that's not considered destructive, that is considered part of the constructive act of stitching. Therefore, the tearing now is going to be a malacha. And furthermore, the shear for how much you need to tear is going to run parallel with the shear in terms of how much you need to stitch. Since it is two stitches, which is the shear of stitching, so the tearing is going to be two stitching worth of tearing in order to violate the malacha of korea amanas litfor. Mishnah continues, shear hamalabein v'hamanafetz. The amount for whitening and for niputs, the combing of the wool, soveya, the dyeing of the wool, tova, the spinning of the wool, is kamalo rachav hasit kafol. So it's going to be the distance between when you hold out your fingers. And let's say, for visualization purposes, you hold out your fingers like a peace sign. The distance between now your second and third finger is going to be the difference of what the Mishnah calls a sit. A sit, over here the Mishnah describes as being a sit kaful. It's going to be two times that amount. So that is the amount of whitening, combing, dyeing, spinning that a person is going to be chayv. Ha'orich shechutim shiur kamalo hasit. And the weaving of the thread is going to be kamalo hasit, is just simply the weaving, the length of one distance between your second and your third finger as you're holding them out. We start with the Gemara Viriminu. Hakorei b'chamaso v'avelo v'ameso chayv. So here in the Braisa says the exact opposite of our Mishnah. The Braisa says that if a person were to tear because he was angry, or because of avelos and almeso, so a person is going to be chayv. V'afa pishim mechalos haShabbos yasa yidei kriya. And even though he violated Shabbos in the tears that he did, nevertheless, as far as the mitzvah of kriya is concerned, the mitzvah of kriya has been accomplished. Right, a fun discussion which our Gemara really does not entertain is, but certainly an interesting discussion is going to be that he's fulfilled the mitzvah of kriya, but he's done so on Shabbos. Doesn't that fall under the category of mitzvah haba be'avera? Now, our Gemara really doesn't entertain that question, so presumably our Gemara doesn't feel that it's much of a question, but it is certainly a discussion to be had that is off the daf. But anyway, let's continue in the Gemara. We obviously now have a steerer between our Mishnah and the Braisa. Our Mishnah says that when a person tears out of anger or because he's tearing out of the requirement of having lost a relative, our Mishnah says it's a destructive act and therefore you're going to be potter. In the Braisa, the Braisa says that it is considered constructive and therefore you're going to be chayv. Well, quite frankly, the Braisa doesn't say it, doesn't call it constructive, but certainly the Braisa says you're going to be chayv in doing so. What is the difference between the Braisa and the Mishnah? Lokasha habe meisideh habe meis ama. So the Gemara says, well, the difference could be you're caring for one of your relatives, that's meisideh, or you're just simply caring because somebody died. So the Gemara says that's the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. That's very hard to defend. Look back at the Mishnah. The Gemara does so right now. Ha meiso ketani. The Mishnah says the word meiso, which means it's possessive. It's your mace. So the Gemara says, well, olam meisideh, ovahanach la b'nei avelos ninhu. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we could read the Mishnah as follows. Maybe it really is your mace, not in the possessive, meaning it's a relative. It just simply means that you're going to take on the responsibility of taking care of the burial. Rashi, l'olam b'meisideh shemutu alav l'kovro, miu b'hanach la b'nei avelos ninhu. You're taking the responsibility of burial, even though it's not one of your relatives. Sheina ma'osam ha'amurim b'parshas kohanim. Avi v'imo b'no b'ito achi v'achoso. It's not one of the seven relatives. So it could very well be that our Mishnah is just simply describing where you it's possessive in the fact that you're going to be responsible, but it is not one that you have to tear kriya over. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Let's make sure that we understand when a person needs to tear kriya and when a person does not need to tear kriya. So the Gemara says, Ve'i chacham hu chiyuva mechayiv. So the Gemara says, okay, let's start off with the following. The assumption that the Gemara is assuming that we know is that for the loss of one of your seven relatives, father, mother, sister, brother, unmarried sister, sister, brother, son, daughter, and a spouse, so there's an absolute requirement that a person has to do kriya over the death of any one of the Shiva Krovin. That is a given. The Gemara now is going to add, but on top of that, so let's say the Mishnah is describing somebody who's not one of the seven relatives. The Gemara says there still is a mitzvah of kriya, and here now we're going to go through a lot of what we learned back in Moed Katan. So the Gemara says, Ichachamu chiyuva mechayev. Let's say the person who died was a Tam Chacham. There's a mitzvah to do kriya, d'tanya. Chacham shemeta kol krovav, that when a Chacham dies, a Tam Chacham dies, so everyone becomes his relative. Now, literally, hakol krovav sakadacha elayim hakol kikrovav. It doesn't mean literally everyone is his relative, it means everyone's like his relative. Hakol korin alav, hakol chosin alav, hakol mavrin alav, birachva. And three halachas that are going to apply even though he's not family, but halacha views him as being as part of your family, and therefore you do the act of kriya, you tear. Also the act of cholzen. Cholzen is a minug, it's an old minug which is not practiced in this to this day, and that is you reveal a little bit of your shoulder. The hakom mavrin alav. Mavrin, the Suda Savra. Suda Savra is that the first meal that you eat after the burial is what's called Suda Savra, Havra from the word bari, which means healthy. And that means to say that the first meal that you're going to be eating is going to help you physically, emotionally, and other people are feeding it to you. It's support from the community. This is the Suda Savra. And everyone is going to have a Suda Savra over the Tam Chacham. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. So if our Mishnah is describing somebody, a non-family member, but he's a Talmud Chacham, there's still a mitzvah of Kriya, and that's not destructive, that's constructive. So the Gemara says, Lotzricha d'lav Chacham ho. The Gemara says, okay, so he's not a Talmud Chacham. The Gemara says, fine, he's not a Talmud Chacham. E Adam Kasher hu chuyva mechayiv, even if he's just an Adam Kasher. So he's not this big Talmud Chacham, but what is he? He is simply, sorry for not giving a legal definition, but he's a good guy. So the Gemara says there's still a chiyuv to do kriya. D'tanya mimneima meisim banav amnasa shaladam kashem ketanim kidei shiiv kevita baladam kasher. So the Gemara over here says, why is it that a person rachmanus loses a son or a daughter when they are young, so that person now will come and be mourning, crying and mourning over an adam kasher? So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. The order over here seems to be totally out of whack. Kedeshi Yivke. What does he mean? So that he will cry. Meaning, Irvuna Shakli Mine. Is that how Akash Baruch Hu operates? That Akash Baruch Hu basically takes collateral from you and says to you, okay, here's now, so that you will do the following, so I'm going to take your child. The Akash Baruch Hu does not operate that way. Elimim Nesha Lobach of Isap al Adam Kasher. Shekola Boch al Adam Kasher, Mochon al Kolav Nasav, Bishul Kavash Sha'asa. So the Gemara says, reverse the orders. It's because you had an opportunity to cry over an Adam Kasher, and you missed that opportunity of crying over an Adam Kasher, so then, Mida Kenega, Mida Akash Baruch Hu then goes ahead and takes away your children. It sounds like a very serious somewhat, I'm a little bit careful about how I want to say this, but somewhat of a reach in terms of punishment, but you missed an opportunity of grieving and grief. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you grieving and grief. At least now the order presents itself a lot better. It is mida keneged mida against your actions, not in anticipation of what you will do, but as a reaction of what you did. So the Gemara says, anyway, but the point of all this is that you have to do kriya even over an adam kasher. So lo tzricha d'lav adam kasher hu. The Gemara says, okay, so maybe the Mishnah is not describing an adam kasher. So our Mishnah is not talking about a relative. Our Mishnah is not talking about a Talmud Chacham. Our Mishnah is not talking about an Adam Kasher. So the Gemara says, still, so the Gemara says, but were you there at the time of death? Because if you were there at the time of death, there is a mitzvah to do kriya. The Tanya will learn to the Bryce, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Omer HaOmer, Alameis B'Shah, Yitzias Neshama, Chayv L'Kroah. Halamaz Adamala Sefer Torah Shenisrafa. So just like a Sefer Torah being burnt, a person has a mitzvah to do kriya. So too, at the Yitzias Neshama of anybody, even if it's not an Adam Kasher, there's still a mitzvah to do kriya. Rashi's language over here, at the end of Dibur HaMaskil, the Sefer Torah Shenisraf, Af Nishmas Yisrael, Hanitals Domalo, Domalo. When a person loses his Neshama, it's like the burning of a Sefer Torah, She'ein Lecha Reik B'Yisrael, She'ein Bo Torah Mitzvos. Because even the most empty of the Jewish people has some Torah and mitzvahs contained therein, and so therefore the loss of the neshama is like the burning of a sefer Torah. You're going to be doing kriya. So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha de lo kai b'shas yitzias neshama." So the Gemara says, "Okay, maybe we're talking about a case where you were not there at the time yitzias neshama." Okay, so that was a lengthy discussion in the Gemara regarding the case of our Mishnah. How can our Mishnah describe doing kriya over the death of somebody as a non-constructive act, as a totally destructive act? So we have now just limited, significantly limited, to somebody where you don't have a mitzvah to do kriya. It's not your family member. It's not a Talmid Chacham. It's not an Adam Kasher. And you weren't there at the time of Yitzias Neshama. Okay. Tenach Meso, Ela Chamaso, Chamaso Kasha. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we've dealt with the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa as it relates to doing kriya over the death of a person. But now the Gemara says, what about the discrepancy between doing kriya over your anger? In our Mishnah, the Mishnah described that as being destructive. In the Gemara described as being constructive. Which one is it? So Chamaso, Chamaso, Namilo Kasha, HaRebi Yehuda, HaRebi Shimon. HaRebi Yehuda d'amar malacha shein tzricha legufa chayev aleha. HaRebi Shimon d'amar malacha shein tzricha legufa pater aleha. So here the Gemara says that the difference between them could be just simply be the difference between the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda versus the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. And now we're on to the topic again of malacha shein tzricha legufa. This is that davar shein miskaven are topics that keep emerging and re-emerging again and again throughout the Masechta. These are big themes throughout Masechta Shabbos. Malacha shein tzricha legufa, let's reintroduce ourselves. The idea is that I'm doing the malacha, but, now the way Rashi described it, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, but we're in a situation where I didn't want the situation here, and the only reason why I'm doing this act is simply because I want the lack of the current situation. I just simply want its absence. Classic example that we discussed earlier is where there's a mace in the house, and now I want to do the malacha votzah, not because I want the mace to go from point A to point B, just simply because I don't want it here in point A. That, says Rashi, is a description, a definition of malacha she'in tzricha legufa. This was back on Daf Tzadi Dalet. Tosos over there says, no, the definition of malacha she'in tzricha legufa is that the only time that it is a malacha is if it's done with the same goal as was done in the Mishkan. If it's not the same goal as it was done in the Mishkan, that is not considered a malacha hatzrich legufa. It's now considered a malacha she'en hatzrich legufa. Good, this was Rashi. Tosfos back on Daf Tzadi Dalet. So now, the Gemara over here says, here's another example of malacha she'en hatzrich legufa, and that is where you're tearing something mechamaso. So you're tearing, but for a different purpose. Okay, and you can figure out how to plug in Rashi and how to plug in Tosfos. But anyway, you're tearing for a different purpose. Not for the purposes of stitching, but you're tearing because it's relieving you of your anger. So the Gemara says this is going to be now a difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and that could now easily reflect the differences between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Gemara says, I'm not so sure. Eima d'shamas le Rabbi Yehuda g'mimitakin. I can understand Rabbi Yehuda saying that malacha shein tzrich legufa is going to be chayav in a situation of tikkun, of construction. The mekalkel mishamas le, but here we're talking about a malacha that is destructive in nature. And since the malacha is destructive in nature, maybe then under those circumstances, Rabbi Yehuda is not going to file this under a malacha shein tzrich legufa, and maybe Rabbi Yehuda would not say in such a situation that you would in fact be chayit. Amar Rabbi Avin hainami misakin hu, dika avi nachas ruach litzro. So the Gemara says, no, this can be viewed as constructive in nature. Why? Because what you're going to do now as you're tearing is that it's going to calm you down somewhat. And so since the action is destructive but with some constructive purpose, in that it's going to calm you down a little bit, so therefore we could file this under an example of constructive, and whether or not you're going to be chayv or pater now will depend on what your position is regarding malacha she'en tzrich legufa. It is now a case of Malacha Shein Tzrich Legufa. Because the original intention of the Malacha, let's say like Tosos, because it's easy. The Malacha Hat Tzrich Legufa would be where I'm tearing so I could stitch. Here, I'm tearing for a different reason. So therefore, it's a Malacha Shein Tzrich Legufa. So now, Armisha that says that you are Pater, that's subscribing to the Shita Rebbe Shimon. The Brisa that says that you're Chayev, that's now subscribing to the Shita Rebbe Yehuda. Okay, I got Nemishari. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Tearing because you're angry. Is that okay or is that not okay? The Gemara says, we learned in the Brisa Rebbe Shimon Elazar, Mimishim Chilfa Bar Agra, Shamar Mimishim Rebbe Yochem Menuri, Hamikari Begadav Bechamaso, Vamishabar Kela Bechamaso, Vamifazim Marosso Bechamaso. So if a person destroys any of his own property because he's angry, his clothing, his utensils, his money, and all because he's angry, that is tantamount to idolatry. This is exactly how the Yetzer Hara works. You're basically no longer in control. You're totally letting your anger take control of you, and so therefore you're just destroying your property out of anger, and the Yetzer Hara basically says, good. You're not in control over here, you're not in control over there, and eventually it leads to Avodah Zarah. V'holich v'oveid. And you're going to be over to Avodah Zarah. So Amar Rav Avin, Mikra, and a pasuk that supports this idea, lo yelecha, lo yebach, el zar, v'lo sishachavel, el nechar, ezu el zar sheish begufa. There should not be, now that if you look carefully at this pasuk in Tehillim, it says lo yebecha, or bach, el zar. There shouldn't be a false god in you. What does that mean, in you? Now the Gemara is explaining. So Ezu El Zar Sheish Begufo Shel Adam Havei Omer is the Yetzer Hara. That's the Yetzer Hara that's inside of you. And the Yetzer Hara that's inside of you that comes out in your anger. So the Gemara says, so being angry is a bantering. So Lo Tzricha Deka'av Lemir Me'imasa Incha Beitzei. So the Gemara says, you're right. So the Gemara now is going to make a very fine distinction between uncontrolled anger and controlled anger. So the Gemara says that when it comes to uncontrolled anger, so that is your Yetzer Hara, that is Ke'ilu Oved Avodah Zarah, and that's an awful thing, and that's something that a person should try his best to avoid. It is difficult, but a person should try to avoid at all costs. The Gemara says that what we're describing over here is something more of a controlled anger. Now, obviously, the differences between them are subtle but important, and the Gemara says, and that's what we're describing over here in terms of something which is positive and beneficial. Rav Yehuda would be throwing the clothing. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Tavar Mane Tavira. Let's go over that again. Rav Yehuda Shalav Matzbisa. Rav Yehuda would be throwing his clothing, and and as Rashi describes over here, he was throwing it out of anger, but he was only acting. He was only portraying himself to be angry, but he wasn't actually angry. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Tavar Mane Tavira. Rav Yaakov would break clothing. It would break clothing or tear clothing or tear kelim that was already broken. And Rav Sheshes Rami La La Amte Munina Aresha. Rav Sheshes would be throwing these things on the head of his maidservant. Again, it was only acting. And Rabbi Abba Tabar Nachtama, and Rabbi Abba would break the lid of a jar. And again, all this was not out of real anger, but only out of just simply a demonstrated anger, so that people will think that he's angry, but he's not really angry, and basically so that he will have a little more control of the situation. And we'll pause over here because from this point going forward, we go back to the Adam Kasher. So the Gemara makes a distinction between controlled anger and an uncontrolled anger. And when our Mishnah talks about tearing because it is constructive in nature, so we have to file that under controlled anger, not an uncontrolled anger. Let us quickly recap our daf today. We start off this morning finishing up the 12th parak of the Masechta. A number of points that we went over, and that is, one, a person can be chai for writing a single letter. A point that we ended off yesterday, but we continue today. So how can that be? So changing the letter Ches into two Zions, which, as we pointed out briefly, certainly seems to support the Ksav Beis Yosef. Anyway, that's one possibility. The other possibility is that the Sefer Torah is correct except for one letter, and you edited that one letter. So in doing so, now you've completed the Sefer Torah, you made a Kasher Sefer Torah, and you'd be chayev for that. presumably because of Makkah Bepatish, presumably. And then we went on to describe Notrikon. The end of the parak talked about how the idea of contraction. The reason why we got onto the topic is because we had a machlokas atanaim. If I write one letter with the clear understanding that this is really a contraction of a full word, would one be chayiv? It's a machlokas atanaim. The halacha is that you would not be chayiv, but there is a sheet that you would be chayiv. Everyone agrees that we do operate with this assumption that there are some contractions in the Torah, and we went through in the Gemara today a total of 6 different examples of contractions in the Torah. We concluded the 12th parak of the Masechta with a Mishnah regarding having a yediya after a chasi malacha. Is that considered yediya or not? Machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim. We pass like the Chachamim that it is in fact a yediya to break up the two actions. We started the 13th parak of the Masechta this morning. And with that, we opened up with the malachas of Oreg and Topher, weaving and stitching. Weaving is, the Gemara spent some time describing. The Mishnah, let's start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah spent some time describing how many horizontal weaves have to go through the vertical strings in order to be chayev. Machlokes Tanaim, Rabbi Eliezer, and the Chachamim, even within the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, is the number 3 or 2. The Gemara discussed that and went over that it could actually be both possibilities. It could be 3 and 2. When adding on to a woven fabric, how much do you have to add on? That also is a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer says 1 horizontal. And the Chachamim say, no, it always has to be 2. 2 to begin with, and 2 even if you're adding on. The Gemara spent some time describing the weaving process, exactly when one is going to be chayiv. Not only for the weaving, but for the setting up of the loom itself. And the Gemara gave some description in terms of setting it up. We went to the Amud Beis. In the Amud Beis today, we talked about tearing out of anger and tearing because you lost a loved one. Our Mishnah calls it a destructive act, and therefore you're going to be putter. The Braisa in the Gemara calls it a constructive act, and then you're going to be chayiv. And we dealt with, on the Amud Beis today, 2 issues. 1, the discrepancy between the Korea b'chamaso of, well, let's go in the order of the Gemara. The Korea b'meso, where there, our Mishnah says that you're going to be putter. The Braisa says you're going to be chayiv. And so, the difference is that if you're obligated to do the Kriya, i.e. it's a relative, i.e. it's a Talmud Chacham, i.e. it's an Adam Kosher, and i.e., if you were there for Yetzias Neshama. Under those circumstances, you are obligated, therefore, to do Kriya, and therefore, that is considered constructive. The Mishnah scenario is where it's none of the above, right? Option E on our multiple choice, none of the above, and so therefore, you are going to be putter, because then it is purely a destructive act, and you're going to be putter. As far as tearing over anger, so the Gemara says the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah says it's destructive and therefore putter. The Braisa says it's constructive and therefore you're going to be chayiv. So the Gemara describes it as being a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon on the topic of a malacha shein tzricha legufa. And then finally the Gemara, last point that we covered today, is that tearing for your anger is considered constructive. Under what circumstances is that considered constructive? The Gemara speaks of the ills of losing your temper and losing control. The Gemara describes anger as being tantamount to being Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So how could it be ever viewed as a positive thing? Answers the Gemara, we're talking about controlled anger. It is just, you are just presenting yourself as being angry, but you're not actually angry. And the Gemara gave examples of Amoraim who did exactly that.